We do believe that pooling can deliver substantial savings, and we intend to promote that forward.
State lawmakers look at ways to combine healthcare cost. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, March 28th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, rejoicing in good snow for the Super Tour Finals in Fairbanks.
Coming here and seeing real snow, actual snowbanks in the parking lot, that is really fun. It's a nice way to end the season.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give.
The amount Alaska's state government spends on health care is one of the biggest drivers of state spending. That's why the legislature is looking at ways to reduce health care costs. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on one idea to bring spending down.
Alaska provides health care for a lot of different groups. There are residents who receive Medicaid, but there's also state workers, retired state workers, and retired teachers, University of Alaska employees, and employees of state corporations like the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And the state pays for teachers' insurance indirectly by funding school districts. Different groups of workers are insured under different agreements with insurers. Lawmakers believe the state could save money if there was one insurance pool that covered everyone with state-paid insurance. Soldotna Republican Senator Peter Michicki says these savings could be a way to help close the nearly $3 billion gap between what the state spends and what it raises in oil royalties, taxes, and fees.
We believe there are significant savings that do not reduce dollars to the classroom, and that do not reduce key constitutionally required services to Alaskans, and it's something we plan to pursue.
The legislature ordered a study last year looking at whether the state could save money by creating a new healthcare authority. The report by Washington, D.C.-based PRM Consulting Group is due June 30th. That will make it difficult to include much savings in the budget that starts July 1st. But Michicki says the Senate is looking for roughly $100 million in structural reforms this year, including savings from health care. And he says health care savings could equal hundreds of millions of dollars in the future.
We do believe that pooling can deliver substantial savings, and we intend to promote that forward.
Anchorage Democratic Representative Ivy Sponholz says she's interested in the report, but she's skeptical about the immediate effect.
It's incredibly complex, and it's not likely that we're going to see substantial savings next year as a result of anything that comes out of that report. Instead, what we'll see is information that helps us to understand the cost drivers and the structural challenges that we need to address, and that'll just basically prepare us to roll up our sleeves.
One group that will be eager to read the report will be the state's health care providers. Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association President Becky Holtberg says it's not known what the report will recommend, but key elements could be ways to reduce the amount and how people use health care or the rates providers are paid.
You know, there are lots of different ways in health care to save money. One is through reducing utilization. Another is through reducing provider rates. So until we see where those savings are captured, it's really premature to pass any judgment on the outcome or to express concerns.
Michicki says providers and other healthcare stakeholders will be invited to discuss how to save money.
So we will be assembling a group of experts and those that are most concerned about perhaps their margins on determining how we can deliver health care in this state at a much lower cost to the state.
Healthcare consultant DJ Wilson says the study and the idea of a healthcare authority negotiating lower rates for those covered by the state holds promise.
I think that will bring pricing pressure to the market that is otherwise absent in Alaska.
Wilson also says that along with negotiating lower rates, the authority could coordinate patient care to eliminate unnecessary procedures. There's one additional obstacle to saving health costs in the next year. Most state workers have health insurance through union contracts, and those contracts don't expire soon. Details about how much starting an authority would cost would be included in the report. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Schools around Alaska are beginning the annual statewide assessment tests in English language arts, math, and science this week. The testing runs through April 28th. This year, schools are using PEAKS. It stands for Performance Evaluation for Alaska's Schools. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
Students in Dillingham will be taking their PEAKS test with pencil and paper. The state of Alaska gave schools the option to administer a paper test or a computer-based test this year. Elementary school principal Nick Schulmeyer says they made that choice to ensure that they will have no technical difficulties.
The last 2 years, put a lot of time into setting up schedules and making sure that we had all the equipment we needed up and running. And this year, even midway through January, we still didn't know what the requirements were going to be. And so we decided our best bet would be paper and pencil this year, knowing that if we had a paper and pencil test, it couldn't fail us.
It's been a couple of years since the state switched away from the standards-based assessments. The longstanding SBAs were replaced with the Alaska Measures of Progress, or AMP. But that's been a bumpy road. Most notably, last year, the computer-based testing was interrupted when a construction worker at the University of Kansas accidentally severed a fiber optic cable. The university housed Alaska's testing vendor, and that cable connected it to the students taking the test. As a result, the scores were canceled. But even before the technical difficulties, there were growing pains associated with transitioning from one test to another. Schulmeyer says that was true of AMP and will likely be true of PEAKS testing.
I think it'll take this year alone for base score, and I think to get a pretty accurate and a good base score, I think it'll take a couple years. I think next year there's a good chance it'll be all electronic, so next year could be a baseline as well. With AMP, they looked at evolving the test over a course of 5 years. Well, then every year your baseline is going to slowly evolve. It could be a while before we actually get something we can kind of use at a district or at a classroom level.
The vendor for PEAKS, Data Recognition Corporation, is the same one that produced the SBAs from 2005 to 2014. And Schulmeyer says that he thinks the tests will be similar. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Alaska skiers turned in strong performances last night as the Super Tour Finals got underway in Fairbanks. The first of this week's Spring Series races at the Birch Hill Recreation Area were ski-a-thon events, which include both classic and skate technique. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the racing and snow did not disappoint.
Minnesota's Jessie Diggins won the women's 15-kilometer race, adding another title to a season that's included World Cup and World Championship medals.
For me, Spring Series is like a celebration of the end of the season. It feels like we're all out there doing victory laps together, it's been a long season, we've worked hard, let's just have some races and have fun.
Diggins' U.S. ski teammate and fellow World Cup and World Championship medalist Keegan Randall of Anchorage came in second Monday night. Randall's season is finishing up strong after taking the previous year off to have a baby.
I was here skiing the trails last winter when I was 7 months pregnant, so it's kind of nice to be here, back in form.
Another Anchorage skier, Caitlin Patterson, followed Randall across the line in third place. Patterson's brother, Scott, won the men's skiathlon, and like Diggins in the women's race, skied strong at the front from the start.
It wasn't really my intention, but I kind of wanted to keep the pace hot, so every time someone else went, it seemed like it fell back a little bit, so just kind of went for it, stayed relaxed up front.
Patterson also highlighted the quality of the skiing in Fairbanks.
I mean, it's Spring Series, but midwinter conditions. I mean, I wish we came here every spring. It's so nice up here.
Patterson is one of many skiers who have competed in the lower 48 and Europe this season, where cross-country races have become increasingly dependent on snowmaking. Both Keegan Randall and Jessie Diggins also commented on how nice it is to ski in snowy Fairbanks.
To race these courses and be on natural snow for one of the first times all season.
Which is terrifying because we've been all over the world in places in the mountains that normally have tons of snow, and that is not a good thing for our climate. But coming here and seeing
real snow, actual snowbanks in the parking lot. That is really fun. It's a nice way to end the season feeling like, all right, the planet isn't completely ruined yet.
Diggins, Randall, and the rest of the Super Tour field can expect somewhat more spring-like conditions as the week progresses, but Fairbanks' above-normal snowpack should hold up just fine. The Super Tour series resumes Wednesday night at Birch Hill with National Championship Skate Technique Sprints. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a week of hands-on science and engineering education, plus extra benefits.
You get to be with a bunch of girls and not deal with siblings, parents, necessarily chores, you know, dishes.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska wants to invest in UA-educated teachers. Individuals interested in a future in teaching can apply for the UA Teach for Alaska Presidential Scholarship, a $12,000 scholarship for degree studies at any of the UA campuses. An education from the University of Alaska is an investment in your future. Application period closes April 15th. More information at drivechangeak.org. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Dozens of Matsu middle schoolers are in Anchorage this week for hands-on learning at the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, or ANSEP. The program is designed to spark an early interest in science, technology, engineering, and math. Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove talked with students and staff.
I'm crouched on the floor at the ANSEP Academy, and it's full of kids. We're all hovering over insulated wooden boxes, and the kids are taking notes. Colony Middle School student Isaac Smith tells me that there is a thermometer and a heat lamp inside.
So right now it's 217 degrees inside here.
As you can imagine, these kids are already seeing the importance of good insulation.
If we're building like a house or something and we need to keep like the heat inside the house, we could use this and to keep the heat inside the house.
This experiment is just one the students will undertake. They have built their own computers, and they'll be constructing bridges and simulating earthquakes, among the other activities. The students have all applied to be here, and the All Expenses Paid Academy houses them on the University of Alaska Anchorage campus. Isaac gets right to the point.
I mean, it's better than working in math class.
ANSEP Regional Director Audrey Alstrom says part of why ANSEP succeeds is that it is simply more engaging than traditional classroom instruction. The program also raises expectations for these kids who are on track to begin taking high school classes. When they're in high school, they will be ready for college-level instruction.
When you see the kids excited about math and science, you know it's working.
Alstrom says the students are also learning communication and teamwork skills, and they're gaining confidence.
It's fun working with the students and seeing their growth. You know, just as students from the first day they arrive on campus where they're a little shy, a little timid, they don't know what to expect, and then seeing that progression and confidence that they've gained in the 12 days they're here. And on the last day, they're able to get up and introduce themselves and give a presentation to a big group.
In the middle of the room, Alex Burks de Kutak is explaining a math equation to one of her teammates.
We're working on figuring out how many gallons of heating oil we'll need for the R value that we have inside of our box.
Alex's teammate, Anna Bell, says terms like R-value, measurement of how well insulation works, are not unfamiliar to her.
My dad builds a lot of stuff, like he built my dog house and our chicken coop, and so he talks a lot about the heating and insulation.
Are you going to go back and tell him a few things about this?
Oh, yeah.
The girls admit everyone is also enjoying being away from home. Darren DeKang tells me after the academy sessions, they play board games and dance.
You get to like hang out with people you know, most likely. And, like, you don't get to do that home. Like, you don't get to stay. It's like a big sleepover for 2 weeks.
So you get to be away from home.
You get to be with a bunch of girls and not deal with siblings, parents, necessarily chores, you know, dishes.
Choosing science over chores? Yeah, that's a no-brainer. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Casey Grove.
The fate of Sitka's city-owned hospital hangs in the balance. An outside consultant says it's time to merge with SEARCH, the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, while hospital leadership wants to remain independent. After a presentation from consultants, the Sitka Assembly decided to seek formal proposals from both hospitals, but not before getting an earful from citizens opposed to the buyout. KCAW's Emily Kwong has more.
Medicine is a life and death matter. And if Sitka Community Hospital was a patient, it would be 61 years old and recovering from a lethal case of underbilling. The good news is that this year, the hospital may finally break even. But can it make a full recovery? Consultant Kevin Kennedy says no.
The hospital has not been making money and continues to lose money.
Which is why Kennedy's firm, ECG Management Consultants, is recommending a merger with SEARCH. Kennedy's report made a compelling case for that, one where SEARCH plans to offer jobs to all employees, spend $100 million on a new facility, and expand services. Kennedy rattled off the 9 areas that lack full-time providers in Sitka.
Cardiology, dermatology, gastroenterology, oncology, neurology, psychiatry, OB-GYN, ophthalmology, pediatrics.
And argued that a merger could change that. He thinks Sitka Community can only stay afloat for another 2 years and urged the Assembly to act sooner rather than later.
I don't know if you can negotiate this deal a year from now or 2 years from now that SEARCH is putting on the table.
Now, SEARCH hasn't actually made a formal offer, but COO Dan Neumeister was there and basically told the Assembly, we're ready when you are.
The real issue is what should be the future of healthcare and how great it could be, rather than sometimes holding on to the past.
But Sitka Community Hospital has a different prognosis, one where financial health is regained, not lost, within these next 2 years, and the hospital stands alone. CEO Rob Allen said his team is also looking for ways to restructure the hospital and grow the strongest programs like the clinic, home health care, and radiology.
I cannot say that, moving forward, we will be the same organization in 2 years. That's correct. We probably will not, but we would still be here and still, I think, thriving.
Well over a dozen Sitkins, many of them hospital employees, patients, and allies, testified with the same message. A few questioned the fairness of ECG's report. Rich Phillips called it a railroad job that offered scant information on SEARCH's finances.
If we're going to get thrown under the bus, let's see what the bus looks like. You know, I want to see all the parts of the bus. Let the Assembly see the last 5 years at SEARCH.
Dr. Richard Ween, who has worked at both hospitals, agreed.
The books need to be opened from SEARCH in order to understand what's going on here, and their own financial stability needs to be questioned.
And Ween added, since SEARCH gets the majority of its funding from compact funds and grants, what happens if federal dollars disappear? Harriet Mayasato-Belil, a patient at SEARCH, was outraged that Alaska Native beneficiaries were not directly consulted.
Our constitutional rights have been violated, and no due process has happened for us. Historically, it's an old story, and one that is not in our best interest.
SEARCH was established by the Indian Self-Determination Act in 1975 to provide medical care for Alaska Natives. But that started to change. SEARCH is expanding in some places to non-Native beneficiaries. In January, they merged with a health center in Wrangell. Should the same thing happen in Sitka, SEARCH would open its doors to all. Pharmacist Trish White pointed out this could close doors for some businesses in town.
We have 2 independent community pharmacies. At least one of those will go away if this happens, and probably both of them will go away because there would be no reason to outsource your pharmacy.
And when businesses leave, people leave. Karen Lucas forecasted a doomsday scenario for Sitka, where the cost of living is already on the rise.
To close the hospital, it's another nail in the coffin for the demise of this town.
A nail in the coffin. Or is it life support? A chance to alleviate some of the financial pressure on the city of Sitka. That's the key question here. Mayor Matthew Hunter quoted Assemblymember Stephen Eisenbeis, who wasn't present, in saying, "We value the hospital in our hearts, but do we also value it in our pocketbook?"
I'm really concerned that if we get to a point like we were a couple years ago when the hospital CEO comes and says, we're going to shut the doors in 30 days if you don't give us $1 million, the city's not going to be able to answer that one of these days. And that would bankrupt us.
Finding themselves at this crossroads, the assembly decided to pause and solicit more information. Through unanimous motion, they invited both hospitals to draw up proposals, search for the merger and Sitka Community Hospital for financial sustainability. Taking a cue from the crowd, Assemblymember Aaron Swanson requested the group hold a town hall meeting to gather citizen input. That will likely take place in a month. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Union members testified recently in support of Governor Bill Walker's workers' compensation reform proposal. The governor says the bill would make it easier to determine if someone is an employee or an independent contractor. KTOO's Caroline Halter has more.
Walker's legislation creates a new definition for independent contractors that would determine whether employers have to pay to insure against on-the-job injuries. The issue is particularly important to trade unions that supported Walker in the 2014 governor's race. Alaska's Small Business Association says the new definition is too narrow for industries that rely heavily on independent contractors, namely construction. But construction workers, as well as a few employers, testified in favor of the new definition in a hearing in the House Labor and Commerce Committee on March 20th.
Okay, my name's Charlie Young. I am speaking to you today in support of House Bill 79, specifically the part that pertains to misclassified workers.
For the most part, those who testified said the same thing. Some employers purposely misclassify workers to lower their cost of labor and gain an unfair competitive advantage in the bidding process.
More and more, these cheating contractors are winning the bids on projects as I watch the amount of work for me get less and less every year.
Paul Grassi, a lobbyist for the Alaska Pipe Trades Union, said workers don't often think about classification until after the fact.
I can tell you this. These independent contractors, once they have this injury and they have $200,000 worth of medical bills, they seldom think of themselves as independent contractors. So they go to the Workers' Compensation Board.
Rhonda Gerhards is the chief investigator of the Division of Workers' Compensation Special Investigations Unit. When employers fail to pay workers' compensation insurance, whether it's missing a payment or misclassifying workers, it's her job to fix it.
There are some who are very well versed and are deliberately trying to save money and trying to underbid their competitors. And there are others who are perhaps not savvy business people, and they think that they could just call someone an independent contractor and issue them a 1099, and that's not how it works.
She said a lot of her cases come from the construction industry, but the issue is ubiquitous.
We have to educate people all the time that the state of Alaska actually determines employee status by a very difficult and confusing test.
That's where this new definition would come into play. Gerhards said it would not change the number of workers who qualify for workers' compensation. Rather, it would make it very clear to both employers and workers who is an independent contractor and who is not. After pushback from the Small Business Association, broader language was adopted, but it hasn't satisfied the group. Their concern is that it would raise the cost of business and that this new definition would eventually come into play for other benefits, such as employment insurance and minimum wage. Grassi says he hopes that will be the case.
If this passes, then it'll give a blueprint so that they have similar definitions. But you got to start somewhere. And this is the biggest problem.
He's not sure if Walker's bills will pass. He's been working on the issue for more than 20 years, and it's never been successful. The House bill passed out of the Labor and Commerce Committee, but it has to make it through two more before it moves to the floor. Its Senate counterpart faces one fewer committee. The legislative session is scheduled to end on April 16th, but this issue has triggered special sessions in the past. In Juneau, I'm Caroline Halter.
Thank you. It is the week of tsunami preparedness in Alaska. Tomorrow morning, a tsunami warning test message will broadcast over radios and TVs in at-risk communities across the state. The drill takes place once a year, and as KCAW's Emily Russell reports, one village in Southeast has not forgotten the importance of being ready when disaster strikes.
Marvin Kadake remembers March 27th, 1964, like it was yesterday.
Gee, I tell you, it was something. When you look at up the town here, you could see all the light poles shaking just like they were rubber.
A 9.2 magnitude earthquake shook the state that day. Kadake was in Cake, a small coastal village about 40 miles east of Sitka.
It was a flat, calm day like today, and you could actually see the tide going out.
This is music from a video about how to survive an earthquake and tsunami. It was produced by the Southern California Earthquake Center, hence the tropical feel to it. An animated beach scene starts to shake, and text on the screen says to drop, cover, and hold on. Marvin Kadake was in his car when the 1964 earthquake hit.
We couldn't even get out of the vehicle. It was shaking so much. And the people that are out on the dock, they were just holding on to the railings.
If you're at or near sea level when an earthquake hits, there's risk a tsunami will follow. That's because the tectonic plates that shifted and caused the quake are probably below the ocean floor. So that shift pushes a wall of water up, causing a tidal wave. The video says to get to higher ground or go farther inland. But that's not what happened in Cake in 1964.
As the tide is receding, some of the young guys were just hollering, screaming, running, following the tide, going out, you know.
That was an eye-opening experience for him, Kadake says.
They survived, but they'll never do it again, I tell you. But this is some experience there, just to see, go through all that motions.
The 1964 earthquake, which devastated much of south-central Alaska, was also a wake-up call for Cake. Some of those light poles, Kadake says, were shaking like rubber. They toppled over, and a section of the road crumbled away. After that, the city moved the health clinic and fire hall to higher ground. That's also where the senior center and the high school are. Kadake has been with the volunteer fire department for more than 60 years. The department now has a plan in place to make sure everyone is accounted for. He says the first time they did a headcount drill at the school, it didn't exactly go so well.
Nobody knew about it, the teachers, and nobody knew who we hid away, and so they had a head count. You know what? They didn't even know who was missing.
The National Weather Service broadcasts tsunami warnings across Alaska at least once a year. That's when the community of Cake runs their own drills. They make sure the clinic is stocked and all the school kids are accounted for. They also have tsunami sirens that blare across town.
It's just a big issue here in Cake that we take this drill very seriously.
Like a lot of communities in Alaska, Cake wasn't prepared for an earthquake like the one that hit in 1964. Now Kadake says they'll be ready. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Russell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Avery Lill in Dillingham, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Emily Kwong and Emily Russell in Sitka, and Caroline Halter, Elizabeth Jenkins, and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.